fourth case. Alvarado Fonseca versus Holder. Ms. Anderson.
Hello, Your Honors, Counsel. In front of you again. We have an interesting.
Disappointed.
I'm just nervous. Last time was very stressful.
You're
Everyone
so
was sitting up there.
Did you ever see three such benign people?
Well, this time I'm glad to just see three. So, so today we're coming because we have an interesting case. We have a gentleman from Mexico who entered in 1973 at the age of 11 years old. In 1984, between the age of 11 and 22, for whatever reason, this gentleman did not become a U.S. citizen. Whether his parents failed to apply for citizenship, obviously he failed to apply for citizenship, although both had the opportunity to do so, he did not. A year after that opportunity existed, this young man committed the act of armed robbery. That was in 1984. Between 1984 and 2007, this gentleman took the, you know, he had the conviction and served his time, later married, had two United States children, and lo and behold, in 2007, a notice to appear showed up in his mailbox. Letting him know that he had to go to immigration court.
What was the immigration benefit that he applied for that alerted everybody to this?
I am unaware of any benefit that he applied for.
Well, his fingerprints came to the attention.
Right. Well, that was prior renewal of his LPR. When you renew your legal permanent residence status, which has to be done every 10 years, you have to go and get your fingerprints every single time. And that does let the government, you know, be aware of any subsequent criminal acts or anything else that they should, you know, that they need to be on notice of.
But he would have done that a couple of times before.
I would have assumed so. However, there were some changes in law that made, you know, some distinct questions as to why or why not the government wouldn't have done anything previous to that. And that's a really good issue. Here, let me explain one last thing before I go into, I think, what will probably answer your question better. Just to let you know that in 2007, when he was given notice to appear at court, he was charged with three things, one of them being a theft offense with a term of imprisonment for more than 1 year, a crime of violence because that theft offense was armed robbery, and then a gun charge. Those were the three things that were on his notice to appear as charges in 2007. And the immigration judge at the time determined that enough evidence existed to sustain those charges, and additionally that due to the fact that those charges were considered aggravated felonies, that he did not qualify for cancellation of removal or any other type of benefit to try to stay in the United States.
You know, the government pointed out that you haven't challenged his removability for having committed a firearm offense, but would I be correct in thinking that it was only the aggravated felony that rendered him ineligible for cancellation of removal?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So if you were removable solely for having committed the firearm offense, he'd still be eligible for cancellation of removal?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Additionally, now to go on to what you were asking regarding is that in 1988 the Anti-Drug Abuse Act was passed, and that is the first time that we saw this definition of aggravated felonies, that any type of list of what was aggravated felonies, and I cannot recall all of them, but murder was one of them, and it's a very short list and it's very serious crimes. The crime of theft or armed robbery was not on that, neither was the crime of just this broader term of crime of violence. So at that point, the petitioner still was not eligible. He still wasn't removable. So I would assume the government there was nothing on their radar at that time. Then in 1990, there was a new list of deportable offenses. and they were broader. And I must also go back to the ADA in that there was a temporal limit to that. It was only a go-forward statute. So in other words, anyone that had committed a crime previous to 1988, the ADA didn't apply. So even had armed robbery and a crime of violence been on that list, it wouldn't have applied to our petitioner's situation.
Yeah, but, you know, our court has repeatedly held that the aggravated felony provision of the statute applies retroactively to an offense that was committed before the statute was amended to include that particular offense.
Yes.
I mean, what about Flores Leon, for instance?
Absolutely, Your Honor, and I was going to get to that, but I guess I'll go ahead and jump ahead since the other acts I was going to bring up kind of follow suit with, you know, this major question. In Flores Leon, this court said that they were agreeing with the First and Ninth Circuit in coming to their conclusion that this was a retroactive application. However, we would point out that the Ninth Circuit has since said in their Ledesma Galicia case that is not necessarily true. They don't necessarily agree with that any longer. They are saying that,
well, let me... That's the, you know, that's the Ninth Circuit.
Well,
yum yum.
I
and, you know, and the government makes the point that the language of the statute, kind of like our last case, that one's a mess too, and so that we have a situation here in which we should defer to the board's understanding of the statute, so long as it's reasonable.
Well, I guess, and that brings me to one final issue here. And I realize that this is a mess of a case. And I mean, this gentleman, unfortunately, you know, every direction you turned, something just then, you know, the next check mark came down and it placed him in this situation.
No, he placed himself.
Well, I am.
This is a sad case. I'm
going obviously,
to agree
you know.
You. It's a sad case.
Right.
But, you know, armed robbers.
Right. No, I agree with you, Your Honor. But in terms of how the law came down, you know, just every single time there was that check mark that hammered his coffin in one more time is, I guess, a better way to put it. And I would also say that in Flores Leon, and going into that ex post facto clause, that the reason that, you know, this court has determined that these types of cases should not apply retroactively, or my understanding of why this court has determined these cases shouldn't apply retroactively, is that these are civil proceedings. They're not, it's not a punishment. This isn't a criminal case, and this court has specifically said that it doesn't lengthen or aggravate the punishment that the person already had under the criminal case. Now, I may be stretching a little bit here, and I would acknowledge that, but I think that recently under the Padilla case with the Supreme Court, that perhaps that has changed slightly, that maybe the Supreme Court has opened the door to saying that immigration consequences are, in fact, strongly attached to criminal cases, that but for that criminal case, they would not have this immigration consequence. So in fact, when someone exits that jail after a one-year penalty, you know, crime and punishment and serving their time, they are now placed into that second step of why, you know, the punishment associated with that criminal act. And although it's not on point in terms of what the Supreme Court was saying, and I recognize that, but they did specifically say that deportation is an integral part of the penalty that may be imposed on a non-citizen defendant who pleads guilty to specified crimes or has a specified crime. And I think that that's where we're trying to ask you to perhaps revisit.
This wasn't a guilty plea.
No, it wasn't.
It was a jury trial.
It does make a difference. I agree with you there. But it still brings in the question of whether or not these are specifically linked in terms of, is the penalty for both, you know, is the immigration penalty linked to that criminal penalty? And I think that that's what we're asking this court to reevaluate in terms of interpreting.
But we have room to do that. You're right about the Supreme Court in Padilla saying it's, while civil in nature, intimately related to a criminal process. But it reaffirmed the position that deportation is not a criminal sanction. So I, you know, trying to be as interpretive as you would want us to be with the dicta or the holding, mm-hmm. It is really, I think, something that's above our pay grade.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Your Honor. If you have nothing else, I'll get back to rebuttal.
Mr. Mack.
Mr. Mack, is the request for a hearing en banc in the Ledesma Galicia case?
Ledesma Galicia?
Yeah, is it still pending
before? It's still pending before the Ninth. I think it's been all briefed before the Ninth Circuit. I think the judges are just percolating upon it. So there's no.
I'm sorry, I didn't even let you introduce yourself.
That's quite all right, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the Court. Greg Mack for the respondent, the Attorney General of the United States. The Court should dismiss this petition for review because we have an alien who was removal by reason of an aggravated felony and a firearms offense, and the petitioner's claims that the timing of his conviction have some material impact on his removability are without merit. This court has its cases in Flores-Leon as well as Esquivel to rebut the Ninth Circuit's decision in Ledesma Galicia. Indeed, this argument was not presented to the Board of Immigration Appeals in the first place with respect to the Ninth Circuit's decision. Those arguments with respect to the 1988 Act and the 1990 Act were available to petition before the Board of Immigration Appeals, but he didn't raise that issue before the Board of Immigration Appeals. So their attack with respect to Ledesma Galicia and their attack on matter of Letman shouldn't even be heard by this court, and the court should apply its decisions in Flores-Leon and the Esquivel versus Mukasey decision. With respect to the Padilla case, I think what the Supreme Court was talking about in the respect that immigration is closely tied to crimes, it was trying to deal with the Court of Appeals views with respect to whether immigration is a collateral or direct consequence of a guilty plea or a criminal conviction. And the Supreme Court said it had never accepted that postulation, whether it was direct or collateral. So when it's speaking about punishment, it was speaking to whether it should view it as direct or collateral. Padilla is strictly a Sixth Amendment case. It has nothing to do with immigration. As Judge Evans pointed out, the Supreme Court reaffirmed that immigration is civil, and you simply cannot apply the ex post facto clause in the immigration context. If there's no questions, we urge the court to dismiss this petition for review.
Okay. I understand all that, and I think that you might be right on everything you say, but it does seem like this is kind of an unusual case. This guy got in some trouble when he was 21, and he paid his price, but since that time he has a couple of kids, he's got a wife here, and I don't know, it just seems like a harsh penalty to separate him from his family here. He's 47 years old now, he's had no trouble since that time.
I think if
there's any kind of discretion that goes into these things.
There's discretion with respect to charging the individual with removability, and certainly that discretion was exercised, and there was a decision made to exercise the discretion to file removing proceedings against him.
What if he were able to get a pardon? Would that be disregarded by?
I think it would be taken into account. I think the immigration code allows for looking at a pardon to remove the consequences of a criminal conviction, but we don't have that situation.
See, I don't know if he'd be eligible for a pardon, but it was 24 years ago.
And the court certainly doesn't have that before it, but that might be a possibility that could be looked at. But the people, through its representatives, have spoken here. The Congress provided for the remedy of cancellation or removal, but at the same time, those Congresses throughout the years have sought to broaden the scope of aliens that were subject to removal. Armed robbery is a serious offense. He was convicted after a jury trial of armed robbery.
Nobody denies that. I agree.
And I think your question, Your Honor, goes to is there fairness here in terms of removing this individual? The people, through its representatives, have spoken with respect to providing for the removability of this individual, and this individual presented himself as the system requires for fingerprints. Those fingerprints came back with a hit. The law provides for his removability. There is no available remedy for relief for removal here.
What was that immigration benefit that he applied for?
I think it was shortly, the petitioner's counsel may be correct, it was a renewal of fingerprints. But I think the hit also came shortly after he married his U.S. citizen wife in 1995. So there may have been something around that where he may have been applying for some immigration benefit. It's not clear exactly how he came to the attention. But nonetheless, he came to the attention of the immigration authorities. The immigration authorities have to take their individuals as they find them. And certainly, he was subject to removal under the laws of the United States.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Mack. Ms. Anderson, your time has expired, but you may have a moment, which is a minute.
Well, Your Honors, I don't think I need much more than that time. I would just go on saying that we recognize how difficult this case is. And I think, like you, as immigration practitioners, we want to look at the fairness issue. But we also recognize that the law has made a decision, and this is how these cases work, which is why we're turning to the interpretation of what that says and whether or not it has been truly interpreted correctly in terms of the temporal limits and the retroactivity, and whether or not that retroactivity is appropriate, given the fact that there is no discretion in cases like this. It is a end-all, be-all. You know, once he was charged, he was removable without any other alternatives available to him. And I would reiterate that, yes, he committed the crime, but it took the government over 20 years to decide that he was a threat to all of us, and he has not been so. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mack. Case is taken under advisement.